Okay, hello. Thank you for joining us. Let's start right with CES 2020 in Las Vegas, which is officially ending in a few hours. All the news really started on Sunday night, and peaked on Monday and Tuesday. So this is your fifth CES, Ben, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was my first, so this was an interesting ride from a newcomer's experience.
Absolutely.
It didn't seem as crazy as people made it out to be honest.
You know, this year felt a lot more tame than like last year.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm definitely curious to see what the CEA, the people who are responsible for it, what they say the attendance numbers are. Mm. Last year was 175,000. And I think it's going to drop maybe a few thousand.
It could be. Or it could just be they reorganized stuff and it made it feel less crowded.
Yeah. Maybe the cars thing, which was at another convention center, maybe that drew in a bigger crowd than the consumer electronics stuff we saw.
Maybe.
What didn't change is Google's booth, which was basically identical, right?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. It was the same gigantic booth that really focused in heavily on Google Assistant and had a ton of assistant devices within, with TVs and smart home lights and devices that connect to assistant, vacuums and soundbars and even some Sonos.
Sonos. We'll dive into that.
Yeah, so from that aspect, it was pretty much the same. Just this year, there was no roller coaster, and in its place was a slide on the back.
Yes, a slide. So yeah, let's start with the fun news. There was a slide that went into a ball pit. That was the thrill you could do. You could wait in line for that. The other experience, which was called a change of plans, was basically a fake house, fake car, fake supermarket experience that just showed off how you could use assistant in your day-to-day life. And both of us did it. And yeah, it was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
It just circumstances in which you might use assistant on a day-to-day basis. And there were groups of six with a tour guide leading everybody, making sure everything went smoothly. And there was this person, there was a voice, like I equated it to Portal, the video game series.
An app description.
That just like walked through everything and interacted and pointed out things to people. And this obviously cannot scale beyond like a trade show like CES. Maybe they could bring it around the country, but I think it is a good way to show how to use assistant in your day-to-day life.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think I said in the post going through the booth, I think I said it would be great to see it in like a pop-up shop or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Which is, but also at the same time, I think everybody has an assistant speaker, right?
A good amount, yeah.
Yeah. And the question is whether it helps to see how assistant works, like you physically need to go to an experience to do that, or whether you could just get away with just, I don't know, having more on-device education. But that's not a question. That's a broader question, what we'll cover today. So there were, I'd say, three feature announcements at Google setting the stage for the year ahead. And right off the top, I would say the most interesting is smart display sticky notes.
Mm-hmm.
In that smart displays, you can say, hey, Google, which I just initiated everything, take a note. And you can just leave a note, and it will appear on the right card just after you tap your home screen to anybody in the house. You don't need voice match to access or to view like duo messages. You can just have leave a note.
I can't do that yet.
Okay. I was really excited about getting a Nest Mini and putting it on my desk, but that just happened. So never mind. But anyways, yeah, sticky notes. It's stupidly simple, a stupidly simple concept. And the voice entry is interesting. I think some people would like to like doodle on the notes, like on the Nest Hub Max, maybe. I'm not sure that'd be so good on a Nest Hub, but I think it would be interesting if you could doodle. I think kids would love that. And Google's really hopping on the idea of this, of extending smart displays as a feature for the family. Another thing was a speed dial card, which just puts your frequent contacts. So that's another kind of kid-friendly feature, I guess.
I think it's your favorite contacts, not your frequent. So you can set them up.
Definitely, yes. Yeah. You can select your, yeah, just like a speed dial.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah. Those are coming out sometime this year, along with scheduled actions. That's what they're calling them.
Yep.
So basically, right now, you can, with scheduled actions, you'll be able to append a time to every single command. So like to every single smart home related command. So start the coffee maker at 6 a.m. and the system will be able to set it. It's faster than a routine. And you, Ben, have more smart home stuff than me. So how would this fit into your lifestyle?
Off the top of my head, I think it'd be useful for maybe scheduling certain lights to turn on. Like if you know you're not going to be home, but you want people to think you're home, or maybe setting them up so where they turn on at sunset or something like that. But I think Google's best demo of it was what they showed off to us at CES, which was turning on a coffee maker at a certain time, which could be very useful.
Yeah, it's people. Yes, most people Monday to Friday have a structured routine in their lives, which you could use a custom routine for. But I think this just speaks to the, you know, hecticness of life and when it becomes useful. And I'm kind of curious why it's taking this long to roll out. None of the features that Google announced at CES are launching anytime soon. It's really angled as a preview for the year ahead. But yeah, scheduled actions. And lastly, from what Google announced that's new, is a screen reader. So it's basically a hot word, read this page command for your Android phone, going back to Android Lollipop and up. So basically, you can just read everything that's on a page. It makes... gives everything like a podcast. It's a straightforward feature, but I think of all the features Google announced, they were hyping this one up so much. The advancements in their speech technology and playback, they were really hyping this up, and it's curious. Yes, it's a handy feature, but they're really proud of this, and I'm curious to see how most people will end up adopting it.
I think it's a really cool tech demo for them, which, of course, they always get more excited with those. But it's also a really good accessibility feature.
Yes.
It's going to help people who maybe they don't read that well or they don't understand. Because, you know, you could translate anything and read it, but let's say you're just learning English and you're not that good at reading it, but you're pretty good at speaking it. Like, I have a friend who's the opposite of that. He's very good at speaking Spanish and understanding it, but he can't read it. Mm-hmm. So things like this could be useful for that.
So what's fascinating about this is that the Google first announced this feature in the Google Go app, which is their app for Android, a search app specifically designed for Android Go phones. So if you want this feature right now, you can download Google Go from the Play Store, and you can have 95% of this feature, The only downside is you need to browse the web through the Google Go app, which has its own built-in browser kind of thing. That's the only limitation of that currently. But if you want to try this out, you can do that. And Google really didn't mention that part when they announced it, but I feel like there's a 5% of something more that we'll see over time that the full Google version will be better. Of course, it'll be more convenient by the fact that you can do start out the assistant command and all that. But again, it's just kind of interesting that this is like their marquee feature, assistant feature for the year, on phones at least. So yeah, that was the three big things Google directly announced at CES 2020. And moving on from that, it's our best CES awards. We had four this year, and the best Chromebook goes to something that's very dear to Ben's heart. So take it away.
So Samsung announced the Galaxy Chromebook, which they've done a few Chromebooks before, but none of them have really taken off since, like, what was it, the Series 3, like 8 years ago or something.
Was that their first? Are you talking about their first Chromebooks?
That old ARM silver one
that was super popular. The one with the wedge.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that design.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. That was their only one that was super popular, but at CES they announced their first, as they call it, ultra premium Chromebook with the Galaxy Chromebook, and it is a $999 Pixelbook competitor. It's got slim bezels, it's got a 2-in-1 metal design, it's got a 4K AMOLED display, it's got a built-in S Pen, it has a 10th gen Intel U-Series i5 processor. It has plenty of storage, plenty of RAM, and it looks like an amazing premium Chromebook. It comes in a very, very bold red color, which looks great in person, and also a gray if you want to go that way. Samsung did not tell us about this before the event, so we all kind of went in blind to it. And basically when I walked into the room and I saw it, I said, that looks amazing. And, you know, I only got to play with it for maybe 15, 20 minutes, but I'm already ready to call it the best Chromebook that's going to come out for this year. It's for the people who want a premium Chromebook, it's probably a better option than the Pixelbook Go just because of the specs it has. And it's effectively killed the current Pixelbook model.
Yes, which is still being sold at $999.
Yes, it is.
Just baffling.
Yeah. So right now, if you want a high-end Chromebook, that is the one to wait for. Samsung hasn't given a solid date, but it's sometime in Q1, which means
by March.
Yeah, which means in my head, they're probably gonna give it a release date alongside the S20,
mm-hmm.
or S11, or whatever it ends up being called. So yeah, that's going to be something to look forward to. I can't wait to get my hands on it for a review, and they are going to have to fight me to get it back.
Nice. But, so, yeah. First questions. Actually, a bit of history. Samsung hasn't had a very popular Chromebook since like the beginning. What is the Chromebook Plus line and the Chromebook Plus V2 popular? Was it popular?
It was popular among Chrome OS fans.
Got
the
it.
Pro especially. But I haven't like, you put it into the context of, do you see them in real life? Do you see people talking about them in real life? And most of the time you don't. With those models, it seemed like, you know, they came out and they are very good, but I can't speak to how popular they were. I think the Plus and Pro, the first gen, were fairly popular. I don't think the V2 probably was to the same extent. But you know, they're all Chromebooks. We don't know exactly how well they've all done, but just from how I've looked at things, I haven't seen many of their models be even close to as popular as that. I think it was the Series 3.
Why not? Why wasn't that popular is what I'm very curious about. Because to me, it seems like Samsung saw like their past Chromebooks weren't as popular, and the pricing was in the mid range, right? Like sub seven, sub eight. It's in that interesting between cheap Chromebooks and the premium Chromebooks. Samsung used to occupy that space of the Pro and Plus. So I'm curious if like the decision to go all the way for the Galaxy Chromebook was born out of them finding not being able to find a mid-range to succeed in, and them trying to own like the premium class of Chromebooks.
Oh, I think part of it's probably that. I mean, I don't think their Chromebooks are unpopular to the point of why are we making these. I think they're just, you know, there's a lot of Chromebook options on the market, especially in the low end. Mm-hmm. And Samsung probably just saw an opportunity here, especially because in reality, this Chromebook is basically just a slightly modified version of the recent Windows laptops they've been coming out with. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit thinner. By the way, it's ridiculously thin. It's like half an inch thin.
0.55 inches. It's something.
Yeah.
And especially when you fold it.
And it's especially, it's a good tablet replacement for that, but it's especially impressive just with the horsepower in this thing. It's got the same processor in it that is in the, the Lenovo Yoga C630, which is, when I tried it, was the fastest Chromebook I've ever tried, including the Pixelbook. It's got more horsepower than anything Google's put out.
Definitely.
The U-Series processors are very powerful. So it's for the high-end Chrome OS user who wants something to run everything, it's going to be something to really keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's for this enthusiast market, which is, it definitely exists. People at a certain point, some people, I think this is like business executives, they can ask like the top of the line thing from their organization, and this is what they'll pick. It'll be impressive to see. But yeah, again, I'm finding it interesting about that mid-range, which decidedly Google decided to occupy this last year, this year. And does that exist if judging from this, from Samsung's past experience? This is an interesting, it'll be very interesting to see how the Pixelbook Go and the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook ends up playing out, actually. It'll be very interesting. So yeah, that's on the high end for our best Chromebook, and let's talk about this now. But our reader's choice, Ben, you can explain why we went that way, was the Lenovo IdeaPad Duet. I did that from memory. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
It's the name is a name which is long and doesn't have any relation.
It's a very Lenovo name.
Yes, I would agree with that, definitely. So yeah, so why did we pick this as our reader's choice?
All right, so we decided to do reader's choice this year, partially just because with CES, there's a lot of the same everywhere. So, you know, if we're going to talk best Chromebook, technically the Galaxy Chromebook is the best, but based on what our readers told us through, one, clicking on the articles, and two, leaving their feedback in the comments sections, the IdeaPad Duet was their favorite thing that we covered from CES. And I have to agree, it looks like a pretty awesome Chromebook. Chrome tablet, technically.
Yes.
So the IdeaPad Duet, it's a 10-inch tablet that has a detachable keyboard and detachable kickstand cover.
Which is amazing.
Yes. So it's basically a lot like the Pixel Slate, except it's a lot cheaper. It's only $279, and you get both the keyboard and the kickstand cover in the box with it, which makes it a really good value. In terms of specs, it's definitely on the lower end. It's somewhere around, if you remember, Lenovo's C330 Chromebook, because it has a MediaTek processor and 4 gigs of RAM. obviously we'll have to get a review unit and use it in daily life to really explain how it does. But, you know, on our first impressions, it was smooth even when it was running Android apps. And this is a pre-production unit since it doesn't come out until May.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say if you think about this like the Surface Go, actually, in terms of sizing, I'm sure most people see that Best Buy and Microsoft stores or whatnot, but it's exactly that kind of that category of device. So there's a keyboard, there's a full keyboard included in the box, which is a very fantastic move for Lenovo to put in, to include in the box to offer as a full experience. The keyboard is fine, it's tiny. The letter keys are full sized, which is what most people care about. And the function keys are also full size, but everything to the right of the main key, A to Z, is shrunk down, and that takes some getting used to. I think in terms of the only thing I'd knock about the hardware, besides the thick bezels, but then again, this is a very cheap device, is the kickstand cover, which is covered in fabric, attaches magnetically. You can pull it out to do a kickstand. It's flimsy. That was like the experience of using it that I didn't enjoy.
It seems hard to open too.
Yeah. And actually, which reminds me, the keyboard does not magnetically... when everything is folded up in the book, the keyboard cover is not attached to the screen. There's no magnet securing it, so it's flapping around, and there's a lot of movement given the fabric connector between the keyboard and the Chromebook. So that's a knock. That's one knock. Take special care in how you put it in your bag. Maybe slide in vertically or something. But yeah, besides that, the price forgives a lot about this device. And I think that's why so many people are interested in it. It's almost, if you see it on discount, which I'm sure will be discount of the holidays, you'll be, I think most people will be, bargain is not the right word, but I think they'll be very attracted by it.
Absolutely.
Buying one for the house, that kind of use case. And the fact that it can do work stuff is just a bonus, I think. I don't think it should be considered as a primary. You don't get this if you're a worker.
Yeah, it's a very good secondary device, which is what a lot of people have been buying iPads for. And iPads are awesome. But if you need to do work in a full browser, which is something that Abner and I have to do a lot, this is a much better option than an iPad.
Yeah.
Like for me, the IdeaPad 2S, I'm debating because I have a lot of Chromebooks already. But I may end up buying it just to replace my iPad for the use cases of where I need to work, but I'm on the go. Just because it's a full browser environment that works really well for such an affordable price.
With such a notable price, yeah.
And because on top of that, you still have Android apps. Like this year for CES, instead of taking my iPad for the plane to do, you know, watch TV shows and movies and stuff, I decided to bring my Pixelbook instead. And it worked out good, but the IdeaPad would have worked out a lot better just because it's a little more portable.
Yeah. We were using a pre-production units. There was some jank there, which hopefully gets tuned out. And we really do need to put this MediaTek processor in the context of it having a touch screen and running that touch optimized version of Chrome OS under the ringer. But it's good hardware. It's mostly good hardware. And that's
on top of that, it's also the MediaTek is also a good move for them for the sake of Android apps, which is going to be this main attraction here. Because it's been proven time and time again that Chrome OS runs great on low-end hardware, whether it's Intel or ARM. But if you're running Android apps, it works much better on ARM because all of those apps are designed for ARM processors.
I think I have to joust with you a bit. I think the full web is the main attractor of this device.
It it's going to depend on the customer. I think for the people who want, because there are still people who want Android tablets, and this is going to be a better value than any Android tablet in the same price point.
That is true. Yeah, in the same price point. It's actually quite weird that nobody is making, that a well-known brand isn't making cheap Amazon Fire tablet-esque tablets running Google services. That's actually a bit weird. Somebody should do that.
Walmart does. They're just awful.
Yes, they're just awful. Yeah, that could be a market for somebody to cheap disposable throw around. But yeah, the web, to me, the full web is the biggest attractor in how I would personally use this device. And like full Google Docs is one thing that would be great. And yeah, it's the size. It's a very cute tablet. And
yeah,
this, I'll be interesting to see how much stores discount the IdeaPad Duet by the holidays.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the person who's going to buy this is going to be, they want a tablet and they want to run, you know, Netflix, Disney Plus, all that kind of stuff. But on top of that, they want to be able to do real work.
Mm-hmm. When they need to.
Yeah, when they need to. And if this gives them the option better than something like a Galaxy Tab S6, which is a lot more expensive.
And because Google Docs is horrible on Android. Google Docs for Android is horrible compared to the full one. So our next thing that's coming up is the Wear OS. It's Wear OS, which is, yes, it's Wear OS is Wear OS, and that hasn't changed. The OS hasn't changed. But both Ben and I found this Fossils refreshes for 2020 winter refresh as quite delightful. Again, we need to wait for a review, but the Skagen Falster 3 was what we named the best of Wear OS in terms of fashion. All smartwatches primarily are fashion choices. And to the credit of Wear OS and how Qualcomm has been able to do the 3100 and add one, and most OEMs are just adding 1 gigs of RAM by default. There is a real standardization of you're getting the same experience all around. But yeah, in that standardization, everything is down to your personal preference. And would you say, Ben, that it's for those people who used Wear OS throughout the 2100 days and were kind of burned by the experience, is now a good time to try the platform again?
The 3100 itself is not a big upgrade. Mm-hmm. It more so just kind of smooths things out just a little bit. But the any watch that has a gig of RAM is a massive experience change versus the 2100. And I'm assuming you were talking about the Skagen Falster while I was fixing my mic, but that's a good example because the Skagen Falster 2, when I reviewed it, absolutely loved the hardware. I loved the display, everything about it. The design is great, but it was hindered very heavily by its specs. And just based on how we were able to use it at CES, the third generation feels significantly smoother and it doesn't have the same hiccups in performance as the original did.
Mm-hmm.
I think if someone just bought a Wear OS watch, like if they bought it on a sale, I don't think it's worth them spending the extra money to just, you know, upgrade and double their specs. Mm-hmm. But if someone owns, you know, they bought a watch a year or two ago and, you know, they're ready to get something new. They're ready to fix some of their issues with the platform and they still want to give Wear OS another shot. I don't think they'll be disappointed because, like I'm going to be saying in a review coming up later this week. Wear OS is about choice, and if you like a design, that's what you want to buy. So mm-hmm. now that things are finally getting smoothed out, it's a better time to buy.
Yes, it definitely is. It definitely is. So yeah, that's our best of Wear OS. And I think the last category to round this out is the best assistant accessory, which is this original Google Home shape smart speaker from Belkin, the Soundform Elite, which adds a charging stand, a wireless charger, up to 10 watt wireless charger on the surface, which this is a very good dual purpose device, form factor. Many people have speakers, and increasingly many people have wireless chargers. Why not combine it in one and just have it in a very central place in your home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I like it when, because assistant speakers, they really are like a dime a dozen. They're all pretty much the same, especially
they don't matter in terms of
the lower end ones. Like when you hit like $100 and you look across the platform, they all do the same thing. It's just slightly different designs, slightly different speakers. But this one it's not a low end speaker. It's a high end hi-fi speaker. They did it in collaboration with Divolay or something like that. I don't know how you pronounce that name, but it's
French.
Yeah, it's a well-known high-end speaker brand, and they helped collaborate on this product, which it has very good sound. We got a private demo at CES, and it sounds very, very good. In terms of Google's family of speakers, I don't know. I'd probably put it around the Nest Hub Max, maybe a little better. Would you agree? Or have you not heard that one?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree there.
It's not quite
in terms of that range,
but it's
no, especially with the AI lack of AI stuff.
Yeah, but it's closer than a lot of these other products. On top of that, it throws on a wireless charger at the top. So, for the people who want something that serves more than one purpose and maybe isn't as massive as a Google Home Max, it's a great product. And I'm excited to spend some more time with it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So
those... I just realized that the Home Max, isn't it $299 now?
Yes, it is.
That's going to be a tough sell, actually.
Either
way, it's a good product. I don't think anyone who does buy it is going to like regret it.
Yeah.
It is going to have a value.
Discounted. Yes. Especially when the Home Max allows you to do stereo. Pairing, which is the real appeal there.
This is stereo pairing too.
Like via cast, correct?
Yeah, they all do. That's how
Google
does it too.
Didn't Google build it out specifically though? The ambient stuff.
Yeah, now it's ported to everything else.
Interesting.
You can do it with any assistant speaker now. They rolled that out, a few months ago?
Yeah, I remember seeing it on the Home Minis and Nest Minis. Mm-hmm. I just thought Google did some AI stuff, quote, end quote.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's the same implementation as the Home Max.
So, that's rounding out our four Best of CES 2020 awards. So we just have a grab bag of stuff. Going back to Lenovo quickly, they have a smart frame, which is... What is it, 21 inches digital photo frame. It's very well engineered in terms of they have a tilting base so that you can do portrait and landscape. There's a swipe gesture so you can quickly move around your photos. It's a nice piece of hardware, expensive, but the photo integration, the photo service cloud integration there isn't quite there yet.
Yeah, no, so at launch, it launches in August, but right now, they don't have anything set in stone on how you can load up the photos outside of just the application. And basically, that's you're going to upload stuff from what's on your tablet or your phone or whatever, and it'll pull it from there to the smart frame. But they're hoping, and they told us this at CS meeting, they're hoping to, and they're expecting to integrate Google Photos and more than likely some other services. They didn't mention anything else that they're, you know, confident in right now, but you know, I could see other photo services, maybe Amazon's, maybe, I don't know, Dropbox or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll have everything that most people want to use, maybe iCloud. But yeah, it's a cool product. Like I had said in my hands-on, it's something that, once it has Google Photos integration, it's...
much more compelling.
It's a far more compelling product. As it stands right now, it's just... it's a niche product that only a few people will want, but... once it's can integrate easily with just anything,
mm-hmm.
it's a home run.
Yeah, definitely. That was the other Lenovo thing of note. You had hands on a phone that features some gold in it.
Yeah, so there's the OnePlus Concept One, and it's interesting. The Concept One is basically, in its guts, it's a OnePlus 7T Pro. But what they did is, on the back, they took advantage of their partnership with McLaren to put some of that papaya orange leather on the back of the phone, which looks and feels nice. I always liked leather phones. But in the middle, there's a strip of glass, and that glass has an electrochromic layer, which can use a charge to hide or reveal the triple camera sensors and the flash. So really the idea here is just to make an aesthetically pleasing device look, but in the future it might be more useful, especially as we get more camera sensors on phones. And also it can double as an ND filter, which for those who don't do a lot of photography, is used to kind of, it helps the camera sensor make sense of very brightly lit areas. And one of their demos was a super brightly lit dock. They jacked up the ISO and the shutter speed, and once the ND filter was turned on, the camera could still extract a usable image with very good colors from that. So that's the useful part of the phone, but the rest of it is really just, you know, it's something for them to show off that, hey, we can do this. And I think the biggest thing that showed that, as you led to earlier, was the sides of the device use an aluminum PVD coating to basically wrap the phone in gold. That's not something they're really pushing very hard, but it is something that they did mention during their little press conference. But yeah, so the sides of the phone are wrapped in gold. It looks cool. It's not like I've never really liked gold phones, like some of the old gold iPhones and stuff. I always thought it looked kind of gaudy, but on this phone, it looks really nice, actually. Cause it's, you know, it's a natural gold cause, well, it's real gold. But yeah, so that's a minor detail of a phone that's never going to go on sale. The units they had at CES, that's pretty much all they have. So this thing's never going to be on sale. And they didn't hint that there would be a Concept 2 next year or anything like that. This is really just kind of laying the groundwork for something they can and might do on a future phone. There's no reason to expect any of it to show up on the OnePlus 8. Maybe we'll see some of it on like OnePlus 9 or something. But yeah.
Yeah, it's just a baffling how they tease this up a lot, the Concept One. And they did not deliver. They really did not deliver.
Yeah, no, before the event they made a big deal of saying this is our concept phone. I think at one point they did say it was game changing or something like that. And it's not. It's just, it's a cool aesthetic thing. that will, you know, it'll help.
Yeah, like
a few people.
Concept phone. I'm wary about this concept phones coming in from the car, concept cars from that industry. I'm wary about it because I feel like Samsung did it once with the Galaxy Edge, like that, their first curved phone. One edge of it was edge. Yeah, they sold that, and that was the most conceptual thing I think that Samsung has done, and they actually sold it to an audience. So they so much more props to them for doing that.
Yeah, I think it's harder to say that the concept one is a meaningful anything, just because, you know, Samsung sold theirs, and then you look at, I think it's Oppo and one of those other brands, Vivo. They both did concept phones, which also never released, but they did things that were much more ambitious. Like, they were some of the first phones without any bezels, and they were some of the first phones with pop-up cameras. And I think one of Vivo's most recent ones has a half-screen fingerprint sensor. So those are the things that a concept should probably be. They should be really more than one trick. That's pretty much all the concept one is it's just OnePlus showing off one trick that might be useful at some point. But really all... somebody had said, I can't remember who said it, but somebody had said to me, it's really just OnePlus trying to get people to look at them. It worked. There was a lot of hype around it, even though it was probably misplaced. But it's a cool thing. OnePlus can do cool things, and they got that message out there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, is there anything else worth talking about from CES 2020?
Well, we can hit on a few things real quick. There was the TCL 10 series. It's coming later this year to the US. They've three phones under $500. They've got four cameras, some 5G, and they're pretty nice. We spent a few minutes with them in person, and I forgot to post that, actually. I need to do that. But yeah, they're pretty nice in person. I'll be excited to spend some time with them later this year. The TicPods 2 went official, and I've been using them for a couple weeks, and they're pretty nice. The sound quality could use a little bit of work, but they made some major improvements from the previous generation. And there's a ton of Android TV stuff, most of which we didn't get to cover, but one of the notable things was TiVo announced the Stream 4K, which is a dongle. It costs as little as $50, depending on when you buy it. But it brings 4K, and it brings a bunch of live TV features, and it's based on Android TV, which means you'll be able to use it with all of your favorite apps, and it looks pretty nice too.
Yeah, the USB-C port for expansion is a good idea.
Yeah, so it looks like a promising little product that I think comes out, I want to say, in March. But yeah, there was a fair bit of interesting stuff coming out this year, and we'll see what...
We'll see what sticks. We'll see what actually makes it, and we'll see how successful everything is. So yeah, CES 2020, that's a wrap, isn't it?
Pretty much. Show ends in a few hours, and... the next big event is MWC, which we're going to probably get, let me think. We've got stuff from Samsung the week before that, and then we'll probably get a bunch of new phone announcements during that week, probably some LG, some Oppo, some Vivo, and all those brands. I'll be there for the first time, and Damien will be there too. So... that'll be something to look forward to in about a month.
Yeah, it's the year is getting underway. The tech year is getting underway. And that is our show for the week. Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here on YouTube. We record this podcast every Thursday. That's what they're trying to stick to, and publish the morning after. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and of course, you can listen on our site at 9to5google.com.
Thank you for tuning in as always. And thanks to Ben for joining me. See you all next week.
Bye. Bye.